Okay, good morning. I'm a master's student at Penn State. Today I'll be speaking on a portion of my research with regard to divot resistance of thick-cut sod and pre-harvest cultural practices. This photo was taken in fall of 2013 at Tuckahoe Turf Farms in Hamilton, New Jersey, just showing this process of harvesting thick-cut big roll sod. Structure of my talk will be fairly standard. First I'll give an introduction on playing surface characteristics in the NFL and the need for thick-cut sod. I'll go through my experimental methods, show some data, and then bring it all together at the end with some conclusions. So first of all, I just want to give an overview of the types of surface that we're trying to produce in the NFL. Similar to a USGA putting green, most or basically all professional football surfaces are constructed with very high sand content root zones for two main reasons. One, to prevent mud games during rain events, and secondly, equally important, to produce an excellent air-water balance even under maximum compaction. The downfall of using sand to construct these surfaces is that it's a non-cohesive soil without vegetative reinforcement, such as turf grass. And when the turf cover is lost through divoting or through abrasive wear, this low inherent surface stability is compounded and can produce a safety hazard and also a playability detriment. In the National Football League and high-end college, the forces imparted to the surface are particularly harsh, much more than any other sport. We all remember from high school physics that force is the product of mass times acceleration, and really in the NFL, your success is based on how quickly you can move a large body. So the forces are particularly large, and in addition, the wear is very concentrated in the NFL. The hash marks are much closer together than in high school or college. And one estimate by Cochran and Brinkman was that 78% of the traffic was concentrated over just 7% of the turf grass area. So we're imparting these very destructive forces to the surface, and the time of year which football is played, the turf is not able to recover very much. The sun is low in the sky, particularly in the northern United States, so shade is an issue at these stadium facilities, and air and soil temperatures are low. So in order to maintain safe and playable conditions, the only solution is to resurface with the cut sod. And typically, the sod is cut at a depth of around 4.4 centimeters or 1 3/4 inches. It's ready for play immediately following installation due to the extreme weight of the strips and their greater stability along with fewer seams. This process is used every year in almost every NFL stadium that has natural grass, besides a couple. But to our knowledge, no research projects have been done on this process, particularly with regard to the sod production. And so as I mentioned above, divot resistance really the primary concern. Divoting and large chunks of turf that are gouged out is the primary mechanism for damage on these surfaces. And so we want to minimize both the number and the size of divots that are removed from the turf to maximize playability and player safety. And so where I'm going with all this is that if the field is replaced often, the surface quality at the stadium is really an influence of is really influenced by what goes on at the sod farm before the turf is brought to the stadium. So with that in mind, we designed a series of experiments to try to maximize divot resistance through manipulation of pre-harvest cultural practices while maintaining tensile strength of the thick-cut sod. And what I mean by this is we didn't want to do anything towards the goal of maximizing divot resistance that will compromise the potential to actually harvest the sod and take it to the stadium and install it. And I'll mention kind of what I mean in this next slide here as I talk about my methods and the treatments that we decided to put in. Prior to the initiation of this project, some anecdotal concern from sod growers was that reducing the mowing height down to 1 1/4 inches or 3.18 centimeters would compromise rooting so severely that the sod would no longer hold together when they tried to cut it at a thick soil depth. This inverse relationship between cutting height and rooting depth is fairly well accepted in turf grass literature, and so we designed an experiment to test that mowing height to determine whether it was the cutoff for thick-cut sod. The sand top dressing regimes were basically a control with no sand, and then 8.5 kilos of sand per square meter, or about 40 tons per acre total. This is a relatively new practice in the sod production industry just because of the material costs, but when we're treating a specialized product, if it has a benefit, it's something that practitioners are willing to pay for. And so we split the sand over three applications to just lightly dilute the thatch as it was forming. No aerification was performed. And then finally, the nitrogen treatments, we had four rates and various timings throughout the spring and fall. Total nitrogen ranged from 98 to 244 kilos of N per hectare, and these rates fall within the low to mid range for Kentucky bluegrass. This slide just shows the distribution of these nitrogen treatments throughout the course of the season. In the leftmost column, this is the nomenclature that I'll use for the rest of my talk. The first number indicates the number of N applications made in the spring, and the second number, the number made in the fall. So for example, the 3-1 N program had fertilizer applied in March, April, May, and then again in September. And we're trying to simulate what saw growers are actually applying. So we use all quick-release nitrogen, and each application was 49 kilos of N per hectare, basically 1 pound per thousand. Kentucky bluegrass was seeded in fall of 2012 before a blend including P105, a highly aggressive cultivar, and some other ones for genetic diversity. Treatments were begun in the spring of 2013 and continued throughout the growing season. The plots are all maintained under regulation by TE on 28-day intervals, and this is a practice that's been adopted by Tuckahoe Turf Farms with whom we were working, and so we wanted to keep it as realistic as possible. And then we simulated a sod harvest and evaluation in mid-November, which is around the same time that these fields are being resurfaced. Really briefly, I'll talk about the design because it's a little bit different. We use a combined experimental analysis to test the mowing height main effect. Because we replicated the study at our own research facility and also at the sod farm, it wasn't practical to mow individual plots or even strip or split style plots at different heights. So we actually selected two separate areas that would be mowed at different heights and then replicated the same top dressing and nitrogen experiment within each mowing height experiment, similar to the way you can combine data across years. And data were analyzed using PROC-mixed, mean separated using Fisher's LSD, and also selected contrast, which I'll show. This is the ANOVA table showing again that mowing height experiment main effect is penalized from the design. That turned out not to matter very much, as I'll show later on. And all the randomness of all the interactions and the top dressing and nitrogen treatments is preserved. This is a device that we use to evaluate divot resistance. Perhaps some of you have seen this before. It's a weighted golf club on a pendulum. It's dropped from horizontal, kicks out a divot, and then later on we go back and measure the length, width, and depth of each divot. And obviously smaller divots indicate high divot resistance. And this is just an example of the type of divots that we saw, so larger divots on the left and smaller ones on the right. As I go through talking about divot lengths, you can kind of visualize the types of differences we are seeing. This is the device that we constructed at Penn State to evaluate tensile strength. It's fairly similar to other devices that have been described in literature. So now moving on to my data. The only treatment to significantly affect divot length was the nitrogen program. We didn't see a significant effect with either mowing height or top dressing or any of the interactions. So I'll briefly show those data, and then I'll talk more in depth about the nitrogen treatments. So the two cutting heights were only a quarter of an inch apart, or about 0.7 centimeters, but basically they produce equal divot lengths. This is somewhat contrary to prior research that's been done at Penn State on mowing height and divot resistance, and I'll talk about that at the end. And then again, top dressing basically had no influence on divot size. The nitrogen treatments did statistically affect divot length. What you'll notice is that right away that the largest divots were obtained under the highest nitrogen treatment, and that was the only treatment to separate from the rest using the Fisher's LSD. This is a graphical interpretation of the same data, and what I'd like to point out is that while there was no statistical difference among the four lower end treatments, this highest end treatment with four applications in the spring and one in the fall is most similar to what was being currently used by the sod grower, or basically the standard. So when we compare that treatment that was least effective to the treatment that was most effective, there was a 29% reduction in divot length, which is a fairly appreciable decrease. Just to parse this out a little bit more, these are two contrast statements I computed comparing the three total N applications, so that's the mean of the 2-1 and 3-0 programs, compared to all other rates. And so when we chose our most effective treatment, there was a 16% improvement in divot resistance compared to the others. And then when we take the mean of all other rates versus the 5 total or the least effective treatment, there was a 21% improvement in divot resistance. Moving on to sod tensile strength, again, mowing height did not significantly affect this parameter. Top dressing and nitrogen main effects were both significant. I did see a significant three-way interaction between mowing, nitrogen, and top dressing. I'm not really sure why that came out under 0.05. After I graphed it and kind of thought about what the physical meaning of that interaction was, we weren't really able to come up with a practical importance. So at least for today, I'm just going to focus on these main effects. Top dressing significantly reduced sod tensile strength by a mean of roughly 10 kilograms. We did some other tests to determine what the minimum acceptable tensile strength was in order to actually harvest and remove the sod from the field. And we believe that threshold to be around 100 kilograms. So while top dressing did reduce the sod tensile strength, it didn't do so to the extent that the sod would become unharvestable. Moving on to the nitrogen program, main effect, we did see an increase in sod tensile strength under higher nitrogen, which is a little bit different than the divot resistance data. The highest tensile strength was obtained under the 4 or 5 total application schedule. However, again, these values are still well above 100 kilograms, and so we don't feel that the tensile strength will be compromised by any of these end programs. The sod was 14 months old and fairly well knitted together, being Kentucky bluegrass, so we feel that even under the nitrogen program, which had the highest divot resistance, the sod would still be harvestable. Just to set this graph up, on the y-axis we have thatch layer thickness in millimeters, and on the x-axis we have these same 6 nitrogen treatments. It's a fairly nice progression towards higher thatch levels under greater nitrogen. And we could just attribute this probably to the greater biomass production under the higher end treatments. The thatch and nitrogen relationship is fairly complex, including some pH feedbacks and some other things, but this is a fairly well noted effect in literature as well. And so we've already seen a couple root slides today. Here's another one. Anybody who's done root analysis on grass hopefully is sympathetic to the painstaking nature of this process. On the y-axis, we have below ground biomass in grams per plug, which is the combined root and rhizome mass. And then on the x-axis, again, these same end treatments. And we did see a small decrease in root and rhizome mass under the higher nitrogen treatments, which is, again, consistent with other research showing the influence on nitrogen on shoot and root ratios. So to wrap this data up and hopefully leave time for questions, mowing height had little influence on divot resistance or tensile strength. This is somewhat surprising because other research done by my advisor, Dr. Knitt, has shown a lower mowing height to actually improve divot resistance, probably due to a greater root density in the uppermost portion of the profile. That's really what we're concerned about when it comes to divots. We only tested a narrow mowing height range in this study. I did another study that evaluated 4 mowing heights rather than just 2, and we didn't see a difference in that one either. I do think that the regulation by TE plays a factor in this too, just by regulating the shoot growth overall. And then based on our data, the 3.2 centimeter height is closer to what's actually used at the stadiums, and so to avoid scalping the turf down after it's been laid, we would recommend maintaining the sod closer to that height. The top dressing we chose sufficiently diluted the thatch, as you can see from these photos. There was no detriment to divot resistance or an appreciable decrease in tensile strength. And lower nitrogen resulted in greater divot resistance, more below ground biomass, and less thatch. And when we compare the treatments to the standard of basically five total applications or 5 pounds per 1,000 per year, we saw about a 30% improvement, which we believe has a good potential impact. And as in all agricultural endeavors, weather conditions and irrigation are certainly important, but we're beyond the scope of this study. So with that, I'd like to acknowledge Tuckahoe Turf Farms for providing space and sod for my research project, my major professor and co-author, Dr. McNitt, my committee members, Dr. Max Schlossberg and Jack Watson, Tom Srensitz for aiding in data collection and overall management of this project, and then the Valentine Research Center and Tony and the Eagles for allowing me to hang around during their resod. With that, I don't know if we have any time left for questions, but if there is, I'd be glad to answer them.
Are there any differences in the time to establishment or time to harvest associated with the different
programs? Sure. The question was time to establishment or time to harvest under the different nitrogen regimes. We didn't do any tensile strength tests prior to 14 months, so I would expect that, yes, there would be a difference. The sod was fertilized 3 times during the previous fall, and so it was essentially 100% cover already going into that spring. So we were basically looking at producing the sod for a 14-month period ahead of time. So, but I expect if the goal were to harvest sod sooner, that you would see an effect.
We don't have any more time.
Okay.
We'll come back after.
All right. Thank you.